You lost 3-0.
3-0. Do you know what this mean? 3-0. But also mean 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect. Respect. Respect, man. Respect. Respect. Respect, man.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards EPL podcast, Monday edition with a big Monday matchup. Ken Lee of Arsenal Fandom here with me. Hey Ken, what's going on, man?
Hey, nothing much.
And Dr. Pete of Tottenham Fandom. How are we doing, Pete?
On cloud nine right now, sipping on a victory bourbon.
I am Tom Miller of Manchester United Fandom, and it has been a rough day for me overall. So, guys, I know this match, this episode is going to be dominated by Manchester as both the big storylines come out of Manchester. But I want you guys to be mindful of one thing, and I'm not going to be pointing out how many trophies Manchester United has won in the past or anything like that. But Jose Mourinho says, Ken, that the score of the Tottenham-Manchester United game was not 3-0. Okay?
No.
We'll get to it. But he said it was not 3-0. We will get
I'm not
to
even
it.
Surprised. I'm also, and I'm sure Pete is not surprised, that Tom would start out this conversation of a home drubbing by reminiscing once again on the fact that they used to win trophies.
It's going to be a really long year. I said that for the beginning, and in the beginning, my expectations for United were third place. I think it's a third place squad in terms of talent, but guys, I don't know. Maybe
third place
I just
squad
underestimated.
With a seventh place manager.
Yeah, maybe I just underestimated the Jose Mourinho meltdown that is currently happening at Manchester United as Manchester United lose to Tottenham 3-0. And Dr. Pete, it really wasn't even pretty, and Tottenham could have had more.
Yeah, the first half was really sloppy from both teams. The number of missed passes, the number of steals without, you know, anybody on them, the lack of communication. Lukaku missed an easy chance that would have definitely changed the game in the first 5 minutes. Absolute sitter. And kudos to Lloris for not dragging him down and getting a red card on that one because he went right by him.
Yeah.
But that would have definitely changed the game. But I thought the first half was actually close to even, which I was fine with considering we were at Old Trafford, which was a former fortress.
former fortress. Ken, what are your thoughts on the first half overall? I mean, you just mentioned Lukaku rounded Lloris on a picked off back pass from Danny Rose, I think it was. At Danny Rose, who was not good in this game, but was overshadowed in his poor performance by just about the entire Manchester United, starting with that man, Lukaku, who had a very poor game. He rounded Lloris, and wide open goal. It was a narrow-ish angle, I guess you would say, but the goalie was beaten. It wasn't that narrow, and for that kind of striker to miss from there is just indicative of where United is right now. Ken, I was trying to let you get your comments in on the first half. How'd you feel about the first half going into the half at 0-0?
I thought from neutral was great, and I would have loved to have seen a second 45 minutes exactly the same way. But from the neutral, it was good. I mean, both teams were getting their chances. Obviously, United was down in the attacking half, blasting the ball every time they got a chance to increase the stats to make themselves feel better about, you know, winning possession and having more shots. But at the end of the day, when 45 minutes was up, it was completely even. And I think it can be considered completely even. I'll make the argument that even if that goal had gone in, I personally believe that a PK was missed against Tottenham.
Okay, we'll get into that now then. Yeah, where...
Just saying, like, to that point, like, that open shot that Lukaku missed, say he made it, I think it would have been hard done to go in 1-0 because that PK was a missed call.
Well, I think both teams had chances. Obviously, that was a most clear United chance. But for a while there, they were taking shots. They were getting deflected all over the place. Pogba had a nice shot on goal that was blocked by Lloris. They were there.
I mean, whether it was or not straight they, at they, him, though. I mean, Valencia shot one out of Old Trafford.
Fred put one out for a throw-in.
Fred one put one out of Old Trafford.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true. There were some bad shots taken for sure. But let's get to the PK and Lucas Moura running across Phil Jones, who gets a shoulder-to-shoulder nudge. And I mean,
oh, you are cute, Thomas. It was Lucas just Moura a back. Is, it was just a back.
Lucas Moura is faster than.
So does that mean
Jones.
You could just run through the back of him?
And
he was rough. He's faster than me. I had to take him out from behind.
He's also smaller. So I personally, and it's probably because I'm a United fan, I don't think that was a penalty. The commentator didn't think it was a penalty. At the same time, some of the respected journalists that we read, they thought it could have been a penalty. Dr. Pete, where were you when it actually happened? Where do you stand on that?
So in real time, I thought it was definitely a penalty. When they slowed it down, I said, that was a little closer. I would just say, by the way they tend to call that in the Prem, probably 50% of the time they call that a penalty, somewhere around there. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that the thing that made it sort of towards a penalty for me was that he was coming from a position slightly behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I think that week in and week out, that's mainly not a penalty. But, you know, Ken, you brought up this a lot when you're talking about refereeing decisions, and especially in this match, I thought the refereeing was really inconsistent. Like, I didn't feel like Manchester United was hard done, and I don't think I got that feeling from you either, Pete, that you thought that Tottenham was particularly hard done, but there were questions on several calls. They didn't end up being big calls, thankfully, like the game was well decided, but it was a really inconsistent performance from the referee. Ken, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I said that earlier. It wasn't, and I was bringing the same point up too. Like, I don't think that it was favorable for either side. It was just the referee was just kind of, you know, if he felt like blowing the whistle, he would. But he would blow the whistle one time for a foul, like an obvious foul.
Yeah.
And then the next time, like, kind of look at the guy and be like, what's your problem? Get up. Like, even, what's his name? Vertonghen, like, had, like, a little giggle. He's like, okay, I mean, I just got taken out from behind. I guess you're not going to call it this time. But then he'd call it the next time. Like, but it wasn't, again, it wasn't the referee showing, like, any type of favoritism
to
either side. It was just all around, like, I wouldn't even call it miserable refereeing. It was just super inconsistent. And from a viewer perspective, it makes it difficult to watch, like, not really knowing what is going to be called and what is not going to be called. He didn't really stamp his authority on the match like he should have in a big clash of top four clubs where a referee, I feel like, is very pivotal to the decision in most games.
Pete?
Yeah, I would agree with that. This was just another argument for VAR because the refs are so inconsistent and bad. And there were a couple of games this weekend where the refs were poor. And in a league that's decided by 3 to 4 points, whether or not you're going to the Champions League, then that's huge.
That was a good caveat, Pete, there. Going to Champions League is considered
Champions
by 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Good.
James
good way
isn't
to cover
here,
our
so we're
here.
Just talking about Champions League spots.
That's fair.
We'll be a Tom Miller podcast for one day and just say that first doesn't matter if you're not in it.
It doesn't matter. It's stupid now.
So 0-0 at halftime, and, you know, United looked okay. They were much more attacking than I think people were expecting. The big tactical move that was
I will give you that. That's true.
Yeah, big tactical move that was questioned was the formation with Ander Herrera, the center midfielder, playing as a center back, while Valencia and Shaw bombed forward, both of whom played all right. I mean, Shaw is especially good, really the only bright spot on United for me. But in the middle of the park, you had Modric was back, Jose's favorite. Fred was buzzing around, but not particularly effective, especially his passing. I think, Pete, you pulled a stat out that said that this is the worst passing percentage between two teams in the league so far. So not particularly pretty. Pogba was poor. But not awful yet. And you went into the half. Jose looked fired up. You guys noticed that he was smiling the whole time, smiling before the game. He had jokes for everybody. Everybody was laughing. He was hugging Tottenham assistant coaches before the game. Like, he was going out of his way to show that he was happy. And then upstairs, the interesting thing was, I don't know if you guys caught this, they went up and panned to Ed Woodward, the Manchester United GM, essentially. And he's up there. He's having a blast. He's hugging everybody. It was like a contest for who was going to be the happier guy. You know what I mean? So they were putting on their show, and then halftime rolls in. Tottenham makes their changes, no subs made, and Manchester United comes out looking to win the game, and it was just a blitz from the get-go. I mean, Tottenham
punched in the face.
It wasn't just the goal.
Correction,
either.
They got punched in the face.
Yuck.
That's terrible.
I thought that would stay in the text message thread, but it's come to life.
Something that good, it's not going to stay in text. Put that in the papers.
That is not good.
Page 6.
Oh, my gosh.
But I don't know how to recover from that. But Harry
Am
Kane
I invited
does
back
score.
For next week? Or no?
Whoever Harry was listening has now turned off.
Harry Kane scores again in August, Dr. Pete, with a nice header, not tracked well from Phil Jones, nobody on the post for United. And you just have to say that Tottenham was absolutely drilling United at that point. It had only been 5 minutes after the half, but they were all over, and they were all over for the next probably 15 minutes until they decided to drop back a little bit. But Tottenham just absolutely took it to them. Two goals in succession, a Harry Kane header, and Lucas Moura sneaking through on the back post after a mistake from United. And, I mean, a nice finish from Moura and a nice finish from Kane. It's 2-0, and guys, we'll start with you, Ken. How did you see Manchester United just unravel?
It happened so fast, I feel like. I don't even know if you can consider it an unraveling, because they weren't even able to kind of dust themselves off after the first one. I think it was the classic, you know, you get scored on, and typically, you know, what they'll say is, like, you're more susceptible to getting scored on, but United just, like, never really caught back up, and before they realized it, what, a minute and a half later, it was 2-0, and at that point, I mean, the game, it was a wrap. I mean,
yeah, it was.
United
it
didn't
was.
Didn't look like really scoring for all the chances they had in the first half. They didn't look like scoring one. And then after that, I just feel like Tottenham's pressure was just, you know, to what you were just saying, it was, we're going to press when we want to press, and then we'll allow you to have the ball when we feel like, you know, there's not enough mm-hmm. time for you to do anything, and we're comfortable with what you're doing with the ball because you guys are not holding on to it properly. They're just, it was just lost, and I just think that this is, you know, even if you like Mourinho, okay, let's say you like Mourinho right now, you have no choice but to feel bad for him. I don't even like the guy, and I feel kind of bad for him after, this is 2 bad weeks, and to just get skull-dragged at home, it's just unacceptable from a United perspective to just get embarrassed like that at Old Trafford, and you just kind of feel bad because he felt like he had all the jam in his donut today, and then Tottenham comes in and just rips it out 48 minutes into the game. And I thought it was cute that Pochettino wore black.
I did read a lot of comments.
It was
about
sort
that.
Of
black
like
tie,
in the beginning,
black shirt.
Like Ed Woodward had gone to Jose Mourinho, pat him on the back, and it's like, you know, all the politicians, they're smiling, but really mm-hmm. they're ribbing each other, and he's like, I can't believe this is your last game, I hope you win, or it's definitely your last game if you don't win, bro. I already called Poch, I told him to wear his black suit, and I checked his interest level, he said he's kind of happy where he was, but
we'll see.
I think I could kind of convince him with a lot of money, and you know, that's what we do, and this is definitely your funeral, bro, if you lose, so you go out there and be somebody and go tell some jokes.
That is pretty funny,
but,
actually.
But it's an issue. It's just to what you were saying earlier, it just defines, I think, the summer, unfortunately for you as a fan and the mm-hmm. club, the summer is just bleeding into the season, and there's no time for it. It would be one thing to lose this game 1-0 if you hadn't lost to Brighton last week, but it's compounded badly now. By that, a loss that you shouldn't have taken, and a loss in this manner is an issue.
It is compounded, but you were saying you feel bad for him. I don't feel bad for Jose Mourinho. I feel bad for managers that get 3 months and have to produce results in 3 months. I don't feel bad for a manager who's had 2 years, finished in sixth the first year. He did win Europa, and honestly, the fans for the most part were pretty positive about a distant sixth place finish, which is very rare. Yeah, very rare. It felt positive. Like, there was positive movement. We were going in a direction. And last year, no trophies. Finished in a distant second. But even last year, like, in the season, it was like, well, we're grinding out results here and there, and we're respectable. I mean, we got spanked by City, but we are respectable. And this offseason, it just became the offseason of Mourinho. And, I mean, you couple that with his style, the Sevilla match, which he himself brought up in the press conference. Very surprising to me. Why would he would ever want to go back to talking about that Sevilla loss over two legs or his tactics in those losses?
It's a fond memory in his managerial
career.
Yeah, I
don't understand that. Like, Mourinho, do what I do. Bring up the trophies, man. Start with the trophies. But he ended with the trophies. As he ended his press conference. But back to the point about not really feeling sorry for him, he's had 2 years. He's brought in over 11 players. Two of those players, he was complaining about center backs. Two of those center backs were available for this match and did not start. And he instead started Ander Herrera, who I don't believe has ever played center back before. If he has, he's been in like a meaningless Capital One Cup game or something like that.
I don't feel bad for him on the whole of his career, United. I just feel bad today, seeing him so jolly and giggling. You haven't seen him laugh and, like, even honestly stand up during a game the whole season.
Yeah. Well, let me finish with what I'm saying. I mean, it just comes down to this. He's had enough time. You've had enough time to build a team and to show your vision for a team. And not getting one or two players doesn't make a difference here. United have enough depth. Pete and I talked about this for a while, about Tottenham's depth basically being, let's say, 14 or so Premier League players, Premier League-ready starting players. United has plenty. They have 18, 19, 20. City has, like, 23. Arsenal, 18 or so. Like, you know, these guys have depth. There's no excuse to not get anything out of your team and to play the way that Manchester United has, other than the Mourinho negativity and the cloud that he's brought with him. And I'll stop my rant now and let Dr. Pete take over. And you can give me your thoughts on Jose Mourinho and then kind of move into Tottenham's performance, because we don't want to completely overshadow them.
Yeah, I think this was a stark contrast in developing players. So who has Mourinho developed? Who's gotten better since he's come on as the manager?
It's Jesse Lingard.
Yeah, you can count the players on a couple of fingers.
An index finger.
Yeah, his transfers have not worked out, and sure, he wants a couple more center backs during the transfer window, but he already had two that were bought under his watch, and he did not develop. And I can tell you that when I saw the starting lineup that Man U put out, I was licking my chops, and I knew it was a matter of time. I knew Tottenham was going to score a couple of goals today. I thought our line was shaky in the back, and I thought your attack looked fine in the beginning of the game. And if you had a defensive line that was put together and had played together and you hadn't switched them out since last game, basically the entire back line, and you put Herrera back there against Harry Kane, Dele, Eriksen, he's the one that left Eriksen in 30 yards of space on the second goal, which was the dagger. I mean, I've never seen Eriksen in that much space. And you think they're not going to score a goal on that? I mean, a great attacking team is going to finish that every time. But, you know, Tottenham, I'll tell you what fixes all the problems with the stadium and not signing guys is winning. And you can't start out with a better start to your season than 9 points in 3 wins, 2 of which are on the road in the Prem, 1 of which is at Old Trafford, which we've gotten crushed at Old Trafford for years.
Hey, I haven't scored.
Last 4 years, we have not scored, which is ridiculous. So to go in there and come out with a 3-0 victory, this is one of the biggest victories we've had in a while, which may say something about the fact that we have no trophies. But regardless, you know, I think our starting 11 can compete with anybody. The problem is depth, and we'll see. I mean, you're rolling the dice with injuries, but if you get a couple injuries, we're in trouble. But this is a hell of a win.
It is a hell of a win for sure, and I don't want to overshadow Lucas Moura's performance in this match. I thought that he was excellent in build-up. I thought he was excellent with his press. He didn't force as many errors as you would expect, but he was all over the defense, knowing that they are wanting for confidence for one thing, and Jones and Smalling aren't especially good at playing out of the back anyways. And Mora was just in their face the whole time. He beat Smalling on the dribble for, what was that, the last goal? Turned him around in a circle and scored on him. That's to be expected. Sometimes on a 1v1, it was very similar to the Alvaro Morata goal that was scored against Arsenal. I mean, it's just one-on-one. I mean, where's the rest of the team? Where are the tactics that support that player? And just to be filleted like that was embarrassing. And then, of course, we'll get to the post-match. Jose Mourinho saying, Ken, that the tactics were fine. He did not lose the tactical battle in this one. That's what he said.
I mean, you can't be really surprised by anything that he says at this point. I mean, it's all a terrible try at deflection. But now, like, the issue is, what are you even really deflecting from? Like, at this point, he should just be hitting everything head on. Like, just attack it. Mm-hmm. Attack all the issues that you're having right now. Attack all the things you said previously. Attack the issues that you have on field. The on-field issues lie solely with you. Yes, yeah. There are a couple of issues with finishing at United right now, but you can argue that finishing's been an issue since he's gotten there. And you know, you're not going to finish in second consistently with finishing issues. You have to be able to get the most out of your players, and sometimes maybe getting the most out of your players is just keep your mouth quiet. Mm-hmm. Do all the talking in the locker room, specific things to what players need to hear. Go out, pander to the media, do your little 15 seconds, 15 minutes, whatever you need to do, answer the questions by the book, black and white, and leave. Stop trying to... It's like he can't get... He loves the attention, I feel like, but he tries to play like he doesn't. And to me, it's just getting so old. Yeah, you did lose 3-0. One, because that's what happened. You lost by 3 goals, 3-0. Two, you did get tactically outmatched. And if you didn't get tactically outmatched, then you're saying that all 11 players that you have and all of your substitutions are not ready to play in the Premier League, which I personally think is just him being able to complete the narrative to Ed Woodward mm-hmm. and the fans, you specifically, Tom, that he's been right the whole entire time. He still is a special one, and he's the genius, and no one knows anything. And without him, United would be even further behind. But he's going to take this band of goons, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, make a run at finishing top four. Nobody could do this but me. I'll make it work. I'll make this, you know, puzzle of missing pieces just look complete because I'm Jose Mourinho. He's a buffoon to me. Like, I just wish that he would just stop talking. And it's just, to me, you feel as bad as you can feel for a team you don't support at all. But you guys wanted him. You loved him. You loved the idea of him coming in. And now I think, unfortunately, you got him for so long, you can't even really get rid of him unless he really, really, really messes something up because he just costs too much to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty accurate. The five-year contract
signing.
What
do signing, you do with a problem
go on
like a five-year contract and his name is Jose Mourinho?
We can go on forever in this direction, but let's just say that the five-year contract he was given in January is an absolute travesty right now. And, I mean, I don't think that would affect how early he got fired, per se, because United has endured both bad soccer and poor results up until they are eliminated from the goals which were presented to them, i.e. fourth place Champions League. See David Moyes' season when he wasn't fired for bad soccer and bad results, and Louis van Gaal.
But he was also on a very, very long-term contract. They signed David Moyes to a five-year deal.
Was it five or seven?
It was five in the jump, and he didn't even do anything.
Made no sense.
But that's the thing.
Sacrificial lamb.
And it's not even the fact that United don't have the money to get rid of him. They get rid of him tomorrow if they wanted to. It's just the thought of... If he was not, I do believe if he did not sign that contract extension back in February, Jose Mourinho, he would be gone tomorrow after a loss like this at home.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how far this pushes the
board. I mean,
board.
Tomorrow.
Yeah,
and
how
they
far
would...
it pushes their board because they want to be a team that says we give our coaches time. But, I mean, you have to say 2 years and,
well, they've
and
given
three
them time
summer
and
windows. That's a lot of time.
This is the first summer where they haven't given him carte blanche with a checkbook.
Yeah, I think he's had plenty of money and plenty of support. The last thing I'll say about it is when Jose Mourinho came in, he took shots at Louis van Gaal, he took shots at Manchester City, and he said that a team is a suit to be tailored and not to buy a brand new suit. But he's got 11 players in. He essentially bought a new suit.
He's bought everything but the vest. I mean,
so, I mean, he wants more. I don't really understand it. He's replacing parts that he's already replaced. So
he said so much he doesn't even know what he said at this point. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, he's starting to backtrack a lot on what he says and he doesn't even realize it.
He is now 1-1 to be the first manager removed from his post this season, down from, I believe, what was he up to, like 7-1? And then he dropped to 3-1 after the summer, and then after the first win, he went back up to like 10-1. He is now 1-1 to be the first manager to leave his post, so we'll see what happens with that. Let's move to the other side of Manchester, although they played in Wolverhampton. Dr. Pete, an awesome game here between Wolves team that really... I think they found the formula that you need to play against Manchester City. And I don't think it's a formula that's going to yield a ton of points, but it's really your best shot. And that is to play attacking football against them and challenge their defense.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say if that's the winning formula or your only chance against Manchester City. But you have to give them credit for going out and just absolutely attacking them. And their fans were terrific in this game. I mean, if anybody... Oh, they were so good. Thought that the Wolves were going to go in there and just take it to them, play attacking football, and come out of there with a point. I think Pep was shocked and basically applauded them, because you saw the week before when, I think it was, who played him the week before that just packed it in and lost 6-1?
Huddersfield, maybe?
It was Huddersfield, yeah.
Yeah, just totally packed it in, which is what every team did in the Prem last year, and just said, oh, we'll just not waste our energy on losing these 3 points. And I'll tell you, man, in the Prem, there are no free points. I mean, mm-hmm. This game exemplifies that perfectly. And Tottenham last week played Fulham, and Fulham took it to us for about 20 minutes of that game. I was very scared. And there's just no free points to be had, especially on the road in the Prem, even for Man City.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I mean, I think that your point about Huddersfield is really important, because those type of teams are going to go in there and try to pack it in. And if you're going to lose 6-1, what's the difference between that and challenging Manchester City's back line? Like, I mean, let's not get it twisted here. Manchester City was a better team in this game. It was closer than it could have been, but Manchester City had advantages across the board in statistics. They hit the post 3 times. They were excellent in this game. Well, actually not excellent. I'll say pretty good, especially since Vincent Kompany was extremely poor in this one. A lot of questions asked to him. But the bottom line is, to me, and I'll turn it over to Ken, I mean, if you want to get anything from Manchester City, you have to attack them.
Of course, I've always believed that. I'm not saying that they have a bad defense. They just have an untried defense. They don't really have to do work that much. They have fantastic defenders, yes. And also, to the point of not forgetting what happened in this game, I will take nothing away from Wolverhampton, but the goal, I mean, it was a handball goal. Like, let's not take that away.
It was. I'm glad you brought that up. I had that in my notes, but I hadn't gotten
it. It was a handball, so yet another scream for VAR to be introduced. Aguero, hit the post 700 times? I'm just saying, like, and...
it was luck, for sure.
Super disrespectful. I can't even remember Wolverhampton's goalie's name, but he was playing out of his skin. I mean, he made fantastic saves. A couple of them. I mean, it was just kind of one of those things. Like, with a team like City, with a manager like Pep, who has shown that they have the ability to bounce back and kind of see through everyone's scheme of what they're going to try to do and just go through that week in, week out. In the Prem, away, you're going to have a day like this. And I think that right now, unfortunately, City's the only team that gets away with that excuse. You're going to have a day like that every once in a while. The season's 38 weeks long. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, quite frankly, the way that the ball was falling for Wolverhampton, I mean, I think it was even, like, maybe not even kind of, maybe more shocking was City got a ball to go in the back of the net after everything that had happened. It was just one of those things where if this is last season, middle of the season, those balls, they hit the crossbar, but they go in. They hit the sidebar, go in.
Yep.
But they bounce off the back of the goalie's head into the net. I mean, it's
94th
just one of those
minute
things.
That Aguero goal is in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I I'd like to say more. I think the better part of this, the draw, is seeing City not in first place. I think will give a lot of clubs mental stability, mental strength to be able to maybe push forward and say, hey, I mean, we have the upper hand now. Let's just not mess up. Now it's an issue of just not messing up. It's not an issue of catching City now. Let's just stay here and not mess up.
I think it's a little too early to take that kind of mentality.
It is, but I mean, you can't really take anything else other than that, because you have to assume that City's going to bounce back. I mean, there's no other team in the league that can be winning 6-1 and the manager's jumping up and down like a psychopath, like they're losing 1-0.
That's true. That's true. I mean,
it demands more than I see any other manager demanding in the Prem.
And the players are so apologetic. They're up 6-1, they make a mistake. Pep's jump up there. I'm sorry.
It's
a culture thing. So, like, I don't take much from the draw except for the fact that it's great. A Wolverhampton got a draw against City.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take them not being in first and let's just kind of ride this wave out and see how far we can take it.
And they're not getting 100 points this year. I will tell you that's the only thing that I can take from this as well.
Yeah. We've already said that. And I think even James and Pep have agreed to that as well. Whether or not Pep believes it or is just acknowledging it in the media is another thing. But definitely a lucky draw. I just would like to bring attention to the method that Wolves adapted. And yes, they needed some bounces, but like we said last year, all the bounces went City's way, and it just takes a few to take away points. And all of a sudden, you have a title race that's not over on December 14th or whatever it was last year. So.
And true to Wolverhampton, I mean, they have a very solid squad. Like, they have a midfield allow them to pass through to the strikers, and they have a very solid back four that they can play from the back if they need to. And if anything, what I think it shows more is that Wolverhampton, if they can play half as good as they played yesterday or 2 days ago, whenever that game was, they're going to be perfectly fine, and other teams around them need to be worrying.
I mean, there was a 20-minute stretch during that game when they absolutely took it to City towards the beginning of the game, which I haven't seen since Liverpool playing City. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to say that was a courageous display. Pete, a great point about the fans. I think that the stadium that they played in, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce it. It looks like the Milano.
What's it called?
Milano?
I don't know how you say it, but
it's actually the Milanew.
There it is. It's going to be a tough place to play. The atmosphere is fantastic. Good on Wolves for getting a lucky win. You still got to get it. The diving handball, absolutely a handball, and a great shout for VAR again. Pete, you made another point via text about how stupid the Prem's going to look this year with all these big plays not being called when all the other teams are using, or all the other leagues are using VAR, and we're seeing that early and often. So 1-1, Wolves versus City. Manchester City not in first place. Instead, that is Liverpool with a 1-0 win. And guys, I think this win is crucial. I really do. I think that 1-0 wins are what makes a title, especially in games where it just doesn't seem like it's going to go your way, even if you're drubbing the other team. And Liverpool's statistics across the board and the eye test, anything you want to say, They were winning this game, and it took a Mohamed Salah goal. I mean, surprise. It's more surprising that there weren't more goals scored, you know, and a 1-0 victory here I think is huge for them as they take 9 points out of the first nine and have a +7 goal differential with 0 goals allowed. Dr. Pete, your thoughts on Liverpool?
I think you're giving them way too much credit in this game. We're talking about Liverpool at home against Brighton. And only the scrub squads lose to Brighton, as we know. But, you know, this was not a road game. And I was more impressed with Liverpool's eking out a victory against Crystal Palace on the road last week. That, to me, embodies a team that could fight for the championship. Winning 1-0 against Brighton at home does not instill confidence in me. So
it's a win.
I don't care. It's at home. And if you're talking about them competing with City to win the title, I didn't watch this game and think, oh, they're definitely going to compete with City for the title.
How crazy is that sounding when you said, we're talking a weekend that City drew Wolverhampton, Liverpool grinds out a 1-0 victory against Brighton, and we're still talking about how no one's competing with City. Like, that's how good City is. They've brainwashed us. They've brainwashed
they
us.
Yeah, they've totally brainwashed us. That's very true.
They are definitely susceptible to dropping points, City, that is. And I think that this is a fantastic win for Liverpool because it's a win. Yeah. 1-0, 50-0. I mean, whatever. I mean, goal differential could come down to play, but you have to assume that it's not going to come down to goal differential. You hope, anyway, if you're Liverpool, because I don't think any team's going to score more goals come the end of the season than Manchester City, whether or not they win the league or not. But a win is a win is a win. If this was an away match, we would be praising them for winning it 1-0. I think that, you know, sometimes it just does come into play that the Prem is the best league in the world, I think, hands down. Like, there's not anything closer to it to even discuss. So these away teams can come in and just play the fact that, you know, we got a win last weekend. We're going to try to get another one.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
I completely agree.
I think that
you're not going to win every game 4-0. I mean, even City didn't. In the beginning, when they were building their momentum last year, they were winning by one goal in the 84th minute. And they just kept winning. And they kept winning. And it wasn't always very impressive. They would let up goals. Otamendi would slip on a banana peel in the middle of the field and fall over. And you wouldn't think they were going to win. And then they'd pull it out in the 85th minute in early September, October. And in the end, they just piled on the points. And I think that's the most important thing, is to win when maybe it looks like you won't. And I think that Liverpool hasn't allowed a goal this year. They're +7 goal differential. And that to me, it was against Brighton at home. And, Pete, it should be a 3-0 game every time. But I always give Tottenham credit when they get their 1-0 wins. I try to give Manchester United credits when they get their 1-0 wins. They're a lot uglier than other
people's. But those are more lucky, so you find it hard, too.
There's a luck measuring tool that ESPN has come up with that did say that Manchester United was the luckiest team in the league last year. It's based on like missed calls, missed penalty kicks. It's really, really gray. It's really, really gray. But it was interesting to me that they were at the top of the charts. Anyway, moving on from the 3 points at Liverpool, we go to 3 points at Arsenal. Ken Lee,
Got that monkey off our back. The first points to get are always the hardest, fellas. And like I said, I stand true to this until Arsenal and Unai tell me differently. Mm-hmm. We started the season out with the hardest schedule of any team in the Premier League. I'm not using that as an excuse.
It's true.
But we didn't look, you know, we weren't looking god-awful miserable in the first two games. The scoreline 2-0 looks bad, and the 3-2, it's bad. You let in a lot of goals for sure. But we didn't look, you know, head and shoulders, like, below those two squads. So now we have a little bit of run of games ahead of us where I believe fully that we can get 9 points. I still stand by 5 games into the season, if we go away with 9 points starting out against City and Chelsea, that, you know, the narrative won't change because Arsenal is such an easy target to go through. I have to go through every week dealing with you morons texting. You guys hate Arsenal so much, you can't even stop talking about them. It's like you can't even... I feel bad for you guys. You guys think about Arsenal more than I do. But I do think, and you guys can, you know, throw the stones at me in a second, but if we come away 5 games, 9 points, the way that our 5 games have gone, I think that that's successful.
I'm not really going to throw stones after that. I mean, you're talking about accepting losses to Chelsea and Manchester City. I don't think there's really much to say
about that. Ordinarily,
I
wouldn't be so accepting of the loss, except for the fact that I just don't feel like we played so terribly that it was a telling sign that this is going to be a crazy season for us.
I don't know. I think they got smashed to bits against City, but the Chelsea
put the ball in the back of the net 3 times. Please stop forgetting that.
I watch your defense, my mouth waters about the prospect of playing against them. That is one of the shakiest defensive lines in the top half of the league.
No question. But Unai's also changing.
Let's not get too hard
tactic
ahead of ourselves. And you're counting on 6 points in the bank over the next 2 games, and we just said that nothing.
I'm not counting on it. I'm saying if we can go 9 points out of the 5 games, I think that, you know, you'll be looking at Arsenal a little differently. You three will definitely not. You, James, Tom, you guys won't. You guys will still say they're the worst team in the league.
Yeah, we're relentless.
The fact that they're not relegated is like it is the biggest surprise in Premier League history.
Yes, it's close.
Well, they've got 10 total games against the top 5 clubs, and they've already got 2 losses. So they're going to have to win some of those games before I change my mind about how bad their defense looks.
I mean, to your brother will argue the greatest manager that's ever walked, graced us with his presence, Sir Alex Ferguson, has always been a proponent of you don't need to beat the top clubs to win the league. So,
well, you can't lose all 10 of those games. They tied like 5 of them.
Right, well, we didn't lose all of them last season either, so.
No, I think the point
we
about
lost the defense... games. We lost teams we shouldn't play. But the defense, you can't skirt around it. The defense is, I think it's a work in progress. Unai's changed the mentality of the way that we play right now.
Definitely a change in mentality, for sure. You know, Arsenal went down in this game. They went down this game 1-0, and it looked like they were going to crap away this game to a bad West Ham team. But
well, you better believe,
credit,
I threw my remote across the room. I was like, this is ridiculous. It's happening again.
And then, I mean, it only took 5 minutes to level, and then you had an own goal. But, I mean, Danny Welbeck finishes it off. But, I mean, Arsenal was good for their money here. I mean, they won the game. They won at home. The fans were into it. 10 shots on target. And you'd have to say that Arsenal looked a lot better. Completely agree with Pete on the defense. You can't play a high line with these two center backs.
If Bellerin is going to be running with boulders in his shoes like he has been. He's so fast. Why does he look so slow? He was getting just steamrolled by everyone on West Ham. It's terrible.
Yeah, Felipe Anderson absolutely dominated him.
It's so weird.
For West Ham. I think he's playing really, really high, and then it doesn't help that Guendouzi and Xhaka are extremely slow, and it leads Arsenal exposed. I think Socrates is actually, I was looking at some of the times for their sprint speeds, and I think Socrates is second in the line at Arsenal for top speed. So I think he has speed. I don't think Mustafi does, and I don't think they're organized well enough to play a high line. That's
exactly.
Really, that's really it.
The play of the high line, the issue is really the skill level of the back four. Like, if you're going to play a high line, not only do you be able to track back to get the striker that is dusting you, you have to be able to get back and make a play.
Yeah. You also need a keeper who's not 47 years old.
Yeah. Cech was better in this one, but he's still just waiting to be replaced.
Yeah.
That the style of play is dictating that they need something different. And I think that it's just a matter of time, like we said before, let Cech take the full brunt of the first few games. And then when you have the rest of your team rolling, you drop Leno into that team and allow him to ping the ball around. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, Leno is really good, as opposed to making Leno take the lump.
Sure.
So I think that's very true. The last point on this one, guys, last storyline. Ken, what is going on with Mesut Ozil? He's not in this match. They said he's sick. He's not available. What's going on with Ozil?
He's not sick. He was sick. Guarantee you what has happened is he got subbed out in the 60th minute of the Chelsea game, the 66th or something, somewhere in the 60s, because Unai is not happy with the work rate. A little rumor came up of a bust up in the training ground. Everyone's saying that Unai said that, you know, this is the position you're going to play. And by the way, you're going to be a substitute. And I think Ozil just, you know, got in his feelings, got in his pride and said, well, I'm sick. I can't play. I don't like it. I just think that Unai, it's a different mentality at the top. I think where Wenger was very much a player's manager and allowed them to get away with murder week in, week out, not having to play their hardest, not playing to their capability, but still having a guaranteed starting spot. I think Unai's willing to take a chance and say, I don't care if you make £700,000 a week. If you go against me and you think that you're going to play in a way that's not conducive to my style, you're the one that's going to go, not me.
And Pete,
I kind of like it, honestly. But yeah, go ahead, Pete.
I was going to say, well, Pete had a bunch of good points throughout the week, and I agreed with him. And that's basically that, to me, Ozil is burned out from soccer. Pete, you want to expand on that? I mean, just watching him and the way and the criticism that he's taken in the last few months.
I just think that it's been three managers now that have had a problem with him. You know, he won it out of Arsenal last year, had his problems with Wenger. He had his problems with Lowe, and now he's having his problems with Unai. And I agree with you, Ken. It's, if I've got a new manager and he's putting his foot down, I like that. And to me, I don't think Ozil is the kind of guy you want to build your new squad around. He's just not a guy that comes in every week that guys will watch and say, oh, you know, I want to play around this guy. He is a good player. He's a talented guy. But I just, honestly, as your rival, I enjoy watching him on the pitch because there are times when he comes out and he is just dreadful. I mean, absolutely dreadful. It looks like he does not care to play soccer anymore. Be fine retiring up in the Alps somewhere in a year and just hanging up his hat.
I do think that he's had a very long summer with his political goings-ons, the pictures he's been taking, whatever, and then a terrible World Cup performance. But also, I'm of the opinion of, you make £300,000 a week, get in the mood to play on Saturday and Sunday. Be professional. If the manager's telling you you're going to do this, you're going to track back a little bit more, look at your bank account before the game starts and say, oh yeah, you know, I'll track back a little bit. The checks have never bounced. I'll guarantee you that. So I have a big issue with players like that. And I am of the opinion that Ozil is a fantastic player. When it comes to Arsenal, as a fan, I just do not like the idea of high-profile players being sold. But when it comes to that, I do believe Ozil is a £300,000-a-week problem. And I'd rather see Ramsey, a burned-out Ramsey, I'd rather pay Ramsey £300,000 a week and stay, because at least I know he's going to play defense and he's going to show up 95% of the time. Ozil shows up 70% of the time. Now, granted, when he does, I don't think that... I think he's one of the top midfielders in the world when he does show up. It's just that, when is he going to show up? And at £300,000 a week, you got to show up every Saturday.
Play the game hard on.
Yeah, play the game. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything you just said, Ken. Ozil's got to sort it out. Arsenal, I think it'd be a good move for Emery to bounce him out of there. But I don't think they're going to be able to with his wages.
To go to PSG.
It's his wages that I think will be the problem. Is over. So we'll see what happens with that.
I just simply don't agree with any English team selling this window just to make a stance for England.
Yeah, I agree.
But if he's got to go, and he's the reason that there's all this, you know, turmoil backstage, I don't see that happening, because I don't see Ozil caring enough about anything to make a stink out loud. But if that's what it is, then sell him anywhere but to anyone in England. I don't care where he goes, if it's outside of England.
Yeah, it might be a way to drop a marker. Besides that, you can sit him on the bench and try to sell him in January. I just think his wages are so high compared to what you're going to get that you're not going to get a big fee. And
him until 2021.
We have a similar problem then. All right, so moving on to the Chelsea match on the other side of London. Well, the same side of London. 2-1 Chelsea. The big storyline in this one was supposed to be that Newcastle played extremely defensively, but I don't really have a problem with that when Newcastle is the team that they are, and Chelsea's going to come out attacking. And it looked like, through 83 minutes, Dr. Pete, that it was a fine tactic, having five defenders across the back line. And, you know, Rafa's just trying to get something out of nothing here. And they, you know, Chelsea gets a penalty kick. I thought it was a deserved penalty kick. It's 1-0. And then Newcastle steals one back from a good cross. Joselu scores. It's 1-1. It's the 83rd minute. And, I mean, if they could have put 11 goalies in, they would have. But they couldn't. And you know what, guys? They just couldn't stop DeAndre Yedlin, U.S. international, from scoring that Augie. Pete, one of your favorites. Augie shows up and ruins the game.
Yeah, I think you could say that Rafa's tactics worked for 83 minutes. It wasn't pretty to lose on an own goal. They were kind of hard done in that respect. And I think Rafa used a little bit an element of surprise. Even Sarri said afterwards that he'd never seen Rafa play five in the back before. And I think these, you know, the managers in the Prem are looking for any advantage. And, you know, Chelsea's obviously watching a lot of tape on them. They're not expecting them to come out with five in the back. And Chelsea is not a well-oiled machine yet. So for them to try and break that down, it was very difficult for them. And I thought they were a little bit lucky to get out of this one with 3 points.
Yeah, I think you take what you can get, for sure. But they do get the 3 points here. They're in third place. There's four teams, guys, that have 9 points through three games. That's four undefeated teams. And, I mean, the other one we'd have to mention here would be Watford. I don't think there's a lot to say about this game, per se, other than Watford got the win. 2-1 over Crystal Palace. Zaha tried to put Palace on his back late, but Watford stays unbeaten, and I mean, they have all the points they could possibly want. It's a good way to start, but honestly, guys, both of us, or all three of us, have seen teams come out of the gates in similar ways and just end up getting relegated. So I think the most important thing for them to do is just keep their feet on the ground through this run here. A couple of the other matches that we'll mention quickly. Fulham 4, Burnley 2. Fulham finally get on their feet and start scoring some goals. Great goal here from Siri. And, I mean, a nice win for Fulham. It was starting to worry that they'd lose some of their confidence that they had built up getting promoted, but they do get the win here, and that's important for them. I refuse to say anything about Huddersfield Town and Cardiff City at all. That's it. 0-0, a miserable game. Huddersfield Town should feel embarrassed they didn't get points off of, or they didn't get 3 points from Cardiff. The game I do want to talk about just for a few minutes, guys, Ken, Everton 2, Bournemouth 2, and some suspect refereeing in this one, and it kind of ruined the game. I mean, you had a red card for Richarlison. You saw the incident, and, I mean, it was like a little baby headbutt.
I know. I saw, and I wish now, I should have noted it, but the same type of interaction happened last weekend, and the referee wrote it off like nothing happened at all. This might even been a little less. It's a pointless story I'm telling, because I can't remember the team. But I've already seen this happen one time this season where it was blown away as the other player who, you know, was acting as if he got hit in the head was, you know, about to get a yellow for simulation. And this referee goes off and gives this guy a straight red.
Yeah, straight
red. It was such like a little bit. It was the littlest bit of a notion of the head even moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little bit wild and turned out to be kind of, I guess, the undoing of Everton. I mean, you can't really play that well. But Everton, I think, minus that red card, because it was kind of evened up in the middle of the game, around the middle of the game, I think that Everton is, no matter how much money they spend, it won't matter until they change that mindset of that club where it does matter to win trophies and people do expect things when you spend that much money. You should not be having a 2-0 victory and losing them. And I wouldn't say it if it didn't happen all the time. This is like the story of Everton.
Yeah, big
leads,
I mean,
and losing them.
I mean, they even went up 2-0 after going a man down.
Right.
They got their goals from Theo Walcott.
Theo Walcott.
Michael Keane scores, and then Bournemouth fights back after they got a red card. So, I mean, Everton scored two goals after going a man down, which is very impressive.
You would think that that would put a dagger in the confidence of a Bournemouth.
Yeah.
But no. I mean, but it's Everton.
They got their point back, and you have to be disappointed if you're Everton. Pete, you want to add anything about the refereeing in this game?
Just terrible. You completely changed the game in the 40th minute for something stupid.
Yeah. It was like a little
VAR,
tiny head.
Hashtag
VAR.
It
was just head-to-head. It was just head-to-head. There was an incident last year with Sergio Aguero and Marouane Fellaini, and Fellaini leans forward. I mean, Fellaini's like literally a foot taller than Aguero, and makes contact with Sergio Aguero's head and gets a red card. And it was like a genuine attempt. You could see him stooping down to bang heads with Aguero.
Toilet brush to scalp.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
I mean, it shouldn't even count against Fellaini because really his afro probably hit him. Didn't even hurt.
Yeah, but that was very... It was very obvious what he was trying to do. And Richarlison here just squared up to him and bumped his head. If anything, it's a yellow card. I think that's a really tough red card. And I think the ref tried to balance it out later by giving Bournemouth one. But the game ends 2-2. And the last match we'll mention, Leicester City 2, Southampton 1. Big points for Leicester City as Southampton scores early. There's no Jamie Vardy in this one, guys, because he got sent off. And you have to say that, I mean, for Leicester City, important points to grab early when maybe you shouldn't get any. A lot of these teams that are grabbing points can store them up for later. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. But the table right now, Liverpool, Tottenham, Chelsea, and Watford all on 9 points. And City in fifth place on 7 points with a +7 goal differential. Arsenal in ninth place with 3 points and a -1 goal differential. Manchester United, 13th place.
What place?
Worst start. 13th place, somehow under Arsenal for the first time in what seems like 15.
Say it again.
Could be 15 years.
Say it again.
13th place, Manchester United, with their manager seemingly on the way out. West Ham with 0 points on the year. Pellegrini feeling the heat early. But, guys, anything you want to add to the weekend, Dr. Pete?
Two things. One, winning fixes everything, losing magnifies all the problems. Number two, Lucas Moura, I've been waiting for him for 6 months. He's quietly flown under the radar, came in from PSG middle of the year, transfer window last year in January, never cracked a very good midfield squad. Son's over in Asia, and this is his chance to shine, and I think he won his starting spot today.
Yeah, he's excellent. Ken?
I have nothing. Very quickly, at the risk of adding like 30 minutes to this podcast, did you guys read that the FA's changed the yellow card rule?
No.
So now, you know, I'll get a 30-second version. It used to be to where yellow card accumulation would flow over to all of the competitions within England. Now, if you get your fifth yellow card, which leads to, you know, you missing a match, say in an FA Cup, but your next game is a league match, you can play in the league match. It used to be to where you can't play in that league match. Now they're mimicking Europa and Champions League to where it's competition specific.
That's actually a really big deal because you could...
They say it helps teams like United, Liverpool, Arsenal. The top clubs will reap the benefits of this, they're saying.
That's interesting. Diego Costa a while ago...
I'm sure there's more details that I'm like missing about this, but...
Diego Costa was sitting on four yellows, and they said that the game before he had a big match, he went and basically got himself a yellow card so that he would miss that the next game against a relegation battler that was a League Cup match or something like that.
Yeah, it will no longer work that way.
Yeah.
That is really interesting that the last 3 minutes is not being added on, right? You're just cutting that out?
I mean, that...
Just messing with you.
All right, well, whatever, Pete. Whatever, Pete.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it could change the game for the better. I mean, you have less tactical yellow cards, I guess.
Yeah, like that yellow card only counts in an FA Cup game. It doesn't add to like your accumulation within the season. That definitely matters.
Good for Chaka, for sure. But we'll stop this for this week, guys. I mean, obviously the pummeling that United took 2 weeks in a row is the big storyline. City slipping up is right there. Spurs nine points through three games is there. Arsenal getting their win when they needed it. I wouldn't say desperately, but it was very important. And we'll go into the next weekend, guys. And then, Ken, after that, we have the international break, which is just
terrible. I know. We got beginning of September, and we got to wait till the middle.
Yeah. No marquee matches next week. Burnley versus Manchester United at Burnley.
Probably be a United loss.
Probably. Cardiff versus Arsenal at Cardiff. Liverpool at Leicester City. Chelsea faces Bournemouth at home. And where's Tottenham?
Ooh, Watford. A battle of the unbeatens.
Battle of the unbeatens. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There it is.
Only one team's going to come out with 12 points. Unless they tie.
So says you.
We'll or they both the end prem. With 10.
We'll see. But all right, guys. For James Lewis, who is on assignment at the beach or something like that, no one cares.
City's falling apart. I'm glad
City
he's not
is
here.
Falling apart. You heard it here first. They now have lost points.
Fifth in the table.
Wolverhampton this weekend. Newcastle next weekend. I mean, it's an issue for them. They're a team in crisis.
They are a team in crisis. It's a great way
to You heard it here first.
Is Pep on the way out?
Pep fired.
Pep out. Pep out. We hope everybody has an awesome week.